So the question becomes, why is lying even more important than all these other things that may have happened and been a part of discovery for wives? And I believe the truth is, and the pain is so great, because when you know you have been lied to or deceived, or, you know, the truth has been covered up, you then don't really know what, if anything, of your life has been real. So it upsets the entire apple cart of your sense of reality. And so it makes, it's understanding that that piece of it creates more pain, actually, for wives than the behaviors that have been confessed.
Welcome to the Faithful and True podcast. We are here today with Debbie Laser, the director of Faithful and True, and Dr. Greg Miller, as always, our our host. And we're excited about today's show, because this is one of those subjects that we've been getting a lot of. When we opened up the opportunity for viewers and listeners to submit ideas for our podcast, this is one of those subjects that came up,
didn't it? Absolutely. And it is really foundational about this idea. What we're going to be talking about today is the importance of being truth tellers, living honestly, living transparently. So we're going to take some time talking about the reasons that sometimes we are resistant or reluctant to being a truth teller, and also the chaos and the pain that it creates for others when we don't. And in fact, this is something, Deb, that you've been thinking about, and you know, you see that it is a significant part of working with women. So why don't you just start with, what are some of the consequences if someone isn't living in truth?
Mm-hmm. I want to back up for just a minute to share that. I don't know how many years ago, it was probably about 15, maybe more, I don't know, that Mark and I had established a definition of sobriety here at Faithful and True, which was fan, if you, no, it wasn't fan, it was, well, never mind, oh, gosh, can we start over?
Map.
Sorry. Map. So we were interested in whether activities of masturbation, affairs of any kind, emotional or physical, or pornography were stopped for the men that we were serving. But along the way, what we realized, and I realized working with the women, was that lying was really the bigger issue. And so we added L to our acronym for sobriety and turned it into the word LAMP, which is now what you use when you teach men.
Right.
So the question becomes, why is lying even more important than all these other things that may have happened and been a part of discovery for wives? And I believe the truth is, and the pain is so great, because when you know you have been lied to or deceived, or, you know, the truth has been covered up, you then don't really know what, if anything, of your life has been real. So it upsets the entire apple cart of your sense of reality. And so it makes, it's understanding that that piece of it creates more pain, actually, for wives than the behaviors that have been confessed.
Right. Well, and I've even heard you talk about the fact that most of us have this intuitive knowing, that we have a sense of what is going on. And theologically, it is God's spirit, God's prompting in us. And so what can happen is, if we are in a place where there's deception, we begin to question or not trust that part of us that is perceiving accurately, but is being told that what we are perceiving is not accurate. And a lot of times it can simply be kind of an intuition that something is off. Something isn't measuring up, that something doesn't seem to be congruent. And then when we are told that, you know, we are seeing something wrong or it's being dismissed, it makes perfect sense that it creates a lot of chaos. And it is this internal disruption that we're experiencing.
Yes. I do talk about that when I come to the men's workshop and explain why not telling the truth is so damaging. And in fact, you know, I liken it to probably the worst thing we can do for someone is not validate their reality. And being a mental health therapist, I think that's become even more evident to me. And sometimes the things we diagnose people with, I often wonder if the real root of a lot of that is they have not lived in truth. In their own home, parents have not been necessarily honest about struggles they're going through, but kids have been there and intuitively sense that there's something wrong. They just don't know what it is. And so again, this, I think because God so longs for us to live in truth that our soul seeks that truth, and our internal reality and the spirit that's speaking to us is giving us these hunches and red flags and gut feelings about stuff. That's what we call them. But I really believe it's the spirit working within us saying, hey, pay attention to this because I want you to learn something
right here.
And then our outside world and the people talking to us are telling us something different. So that tension of the internal, external world in us, when it's not matching up, I call it, you call it chaos. I think most women call it, I feel crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a craziness that starts developing within them with this tension that is really unsettling. And I think it also can present in terms of physical symptoms within our bodies, you know. And what's interesting to me is meeting new wives on this journey before they know the whole truth oftentimes. And when I talk with them about anything physical they're challenged with in this day, a lot of times they have many things that they are challenged with, you know, headaches, migraines, back pain, gastrointestinal issues, you name it, on and on. And when they enter the journey, and if with some of our help, we go through our disclosure process, truth is revealed, they're living with this new foundation, things are matching up, their reality is starting to be validated. What's interesting is how many times the physical symptoms start to subside. Mm-hmm. That was true for me, too.
Yeah. One of the things that we talk to the men about is the best gift that you can give your wife is the truth. Mm-hmm. And then she gets to decide how she wants to respond. She mm-hmm. has the information then that she needs to determine how she wants to move forward. So let's just talk a little bit. I think most of us grew up in an environment where we were told the value of the truth. We know from Scripture that the truth sets us free, and that's something I've actually experienced in my own life. Mm-hmm. You know, I spent so much of my life in hiding and deception that when I began to really be honest and truthful, I began to experience that freedom. In fact, we teach even painful truth creates freedoms. And also this idea that part of the description of evil is the father of all lies. And so we know that there's this painful, disruptive part of lying and hiding and deceiving, and yet we still gravitate towards it. So let's just take a moment and talk about why would a person choose to lie when maybe cognitively, intuitively, they know that what they're supposed to be doing is telling the truth?
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting to look back at all of our lives when we were little people, mm-hmm. To look at some of the ways we learned to cope with life when it got hard. Because back then, when we're small, we don't have a lot of choices. You know, we don't have a wallet with money in it. We can't go to a hotel and get away from people that are hurting us. We can't. We don't have a car to go anyplace and take care of ourselves. So we're very limited. But in that place, I think what's amazing is we've been gifted with a couple of ways we can take care of ourselves. One of those is to dissociate. Mm-hmm. And probably people have heard about that a lot. We can make our minds like go somewhere else so that whatever is happening right here, it's almost like we're on the ceiling of the room or something, watching down, but we're not experiencing that. That dissociative aspect is something that I know Mark talked with me a lot about when he was abused as a young boy. That's what he learned to do. I think because I didn't have that kind of abuse in my life, it was very foreign to me how he could do that. And dissociation can be used very healthily in many of our careers, for instance. You want your surgeon to be able to dissociate if he had a fight with his wife that morning. You know,
right,
you don't
yeah.
want him bringing it in when he's operating on you. And I know Mark was able to give these wonderful funeral messages when we knew some of the people that were part of that service because he could dissociate. And I've always said I've never been good at that. You know, my emotions are right there. But interestingly enough, another thing we can do is we can learn to lie. Mm-hmm. When we're very little. And oftentimes, and I've heard that one of the main reasons we lie when we're little is because we believe we're going to get punished in a way that is well beyond what we believe is appropriate for what we've done. So it's interesting that even little ones are already kind of conjuring up, you know, that was very severe punishment for what I just did.
Right.
And so they learned to lie to avoid that, which isn't that brilliant
right.
when you think about it.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that we talk to the men about is if we are effective liars as adults, it's typically because we learned it as a child and others were modeling for it, modeling the behavior. And one of the examples I use is I've heard so many stories of Christian families that are going to church and everybody's yelling and screaming. But as soon as the car pulls into the parking lot, everybody acts as if everything is okay. Well, the child is observing that. Or maybe, you have a situation where the mom and dad is angry and upset, or maybe they're withdrawn and silent, and then the phone rings, and then immediately they respond in this calm, nurturing, inviting voice. Well, again, the child is observing that and, discerning. There are some behaviors that are private. There are some behaviors that are in public. There are some things you say. There are some things you don't say. And so even in the way we observe our family navigate authenticity helps us to understand different ways that we're supposed to deceive or lie, or different ways that are acceptable. Mm-hmm. Because if the goal is authenticity and transparency, anytime we experience something that is an alternative to that, we begin to understand that as a viable, acceptable option if needed.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are many reasons. I mean, punishment, being punished would be one way that we might choose to lie to avoid something like that. But there are many other things that we might want to do. Like, we might want to lie because we are avoiding somebody's unhealthy reaction. And it's just so uncomfortable. If we know somebody's going to be terribly mad or sad or scared or something, we might just not tell the truth so that we don't have to put that person through that emotional ringer, so to speak.
And I think this is especially true for children that grew up believing they were responsible for their parents' emotional well-being. Mm-hmm. If one of your parents had a strong temper and, even one of the other spouse kind of modeled, well, we're not going to talk about that because that will make them angry. In my case, my mom struggled with depression, and one of the messages I was given is, don't upset mom. Well, as a little boy, I began to learn what news might upset mom. And I wanted to be a good son, and I wanted to love my mom well. And so holding back information was actually, in my way of thinking, an expression of love. Kind of one of our family rules was, if you love someone, you protect them from your pain. And how do we protect someone from our pain? Is we keep it to ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing how there can be some actual expressions of love, even though it is distorted, that is seen as hiding and lying. Mm-hmm. If I love you, I'm going to hide because I don't want you to be angry or I don't want you to be upset. And we can begin to learn that early on in our lives.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of, I think, also the men that come here, and we're encouraging them to be honest with their wives. I know some of them come from 12-step meetings that will remind them, don't tell them anything more. You've already hurt them enough. And so more information would create even more pain. So it's kind of in that same order. Let's prevent them from feeling that kind of pain by just not telling them the whole truth. Mm-hmm. Again, we need to make decisions about ultimately what is the best.
Right.
To be a truth teller, and can someone handle that better than handling this dissension between internal and external reality? And our belief here, of course, is they can handle that with support of other people.
Well, and I've heard you talk about the difference between hurt and harm. Mm-hmm. You know, this idea that the truth may hurt and it is never harmful. Mm-hmm. Whereas lying and deception, that is what is harmful, because like you say, it robs people of their reality. It robs them of their opportunity to make decisions based upon the information that they have.
Yeah. I think you know what I say better than I say, I probably said that at some point.
So what I'm hearing you say too is lack of transparency can be the same as lying. I mean, if you're not really being truthful about something because you're thinking, no, this will either anchor them or hurt them, so I won't divulge that part of my story or what happened, and that can be in the same boat as having lied to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of more about not committing to the truth by omission. You know, yeah. We're not telling what's not true necessarily, but we're also not mentioning what is true.
What is true, right.
Well, and I use the image, I was like an illusionist, where I would get Beth to look over here and distract her by this and keep her from seeing whatever's going on back here. Mm-hmm. And we can get really good about that. In fact, I tell the men, if you have to tell a bold-faced lie, you're kind of an amateur. The professionals know how to set you up in such a way that you're not even looking in the right direction or asking the right questions because you've learned to not trust yourself in knowing what is going on or trusting that intuition. And so it's not just bold-faced lies. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about sometimes denial is about denying something. You're asked a question and you just say, no, that's not my history, or no, I didn't do that thing, or no, I don't know that person. But another way that we do it is we minimize. We might acknowledge, yes, this thing happened, but we try to minimize the significance of it. Yes, I know that person, but we're just friends. Mm-hmm. And that minimizing is very chaotic because it hints at the truth, but it's not a full acknowledgement of what the truth is. Mm-hmm. And then we also talk about when we rationalize. So we try to use some sort of logic to explain our behavior. So therefore, we're not living in the full truth of the behavior and the consequences, and even the reasons behind the behavior. And then another way that we do it is through some sort of sense of entitlement. And we're able to say, you know what, I deserve this. And so therefore, even if I'm going to talk to you about it, it's going to be through this filter of entitlement that doesn't let me live in the truth of it. Mm-hmm. You know, we often tell the guys, whatever is true is true. So you can rationalize it, deny it, minimize it, or justify it, but it's still the truth, and it's that truth that we owe to the people that we love.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I just obviously made a list of a lot of things I thought about when we would choose to not tell the truth. And I think another one that comes up for me is when we want to do something and we don't quite have the right criteria, we're not the right age, the right height, or the right something or other, we might start to lie about something so that we can get a result. We can get to do something we want to do. I think about going to those parks, you know, where you have to be so tall to
get on the ride,
or you have to weigh so much to get into this, mm-hmm. or whatever.
And I've never had that problem.
You had that problem. And how did you handle that, Randy?
No,
you told your kid you gave them shoes with a couple of inches on their heels so they could be a little
taller.
Stood
on my tiptoes a lot. Rocks my pockets.
But there are lots of little ways like that that maybe even as parents we're encouraging our kids. It's okay to not really be truthful in this situation because I know you really want to do that or whatever, so we might lie about that. Mm-hmm. I remember lying about, back in my day, you know, wearing tennis shoes to school was not acceptable. I know I'm showing how old I am, but that was true. And I remember packing them in my backpack so that we could sneak them on, mm-hmm. you know, sneak our sneakers on.
Oh, that's how they got their name.
Yeah. but, you know, it was also a way of lying just to get to do something I really wanted to do. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting how this is a way that we're able to rationalize our decision so that if there is a standard or if there is an expectation and we don't agree with it or we don't believe in it, then we can justify our behavior by saying, well, this isn't a valid rule anyway. It's okay if I do this.
Yeah.
And it's those subtle messages, especially that we experience it as a child, even if unintended, the message is there are certain things that you need to be truthful about, and there are certain things it's okay if you're not totally truthful about, or in this case, mm-hmm. not truthful about at all. And so, you know, one of the things that we talk to the men about is many times when we are exposed and it is discovered that we have been lying about things, there can be this sense of moral judgment that it's because we are amoral that we have been hiding and lying. And the reality is, what I see more than anything else is we're just afraid.
Yeah.
Whatever the fear is about, I'm afraid I'm going to be rejected. I'm afraid that I'm going to be judged. I'm afraid that I'm going to be alone. That fear is enough for us to be able to create this system of lying where we're trying to create safety.
And wouldn't you say that's the number one reason probably for a lot of the lying in a marriage around addiction is the fear of losing
right.
your spouse?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And you know, maybe you have heard this, but you know, in working with couples, there are many women that will say, I never gave you a reason not to trust me. Mm-hmm. you know? And maybe there were times that she overreacted in something, but consistently she was open and she was safe. And one of the things that we want people to understand is this pattern of deception predates the relationship, that we learn this as children. By the time I met Beth, I already had some patterns of hiding and lying that I had learned as a child. And, you know, kind of like what I believed with my mom is if you love someone, you protect them from your pain. If my job is to keep you from being upset, and one of the ways I can do that is withhold information, those core beliefs were already in place by the time that I met Beth. I just brought them into the marriage. Here's someone that I love, so I'm going to protect them from my pain. And here's someone that I love and I don't want to upset them, so I'm going to keep certain information back. You know, so one of the things to understand is that this pattern of hiding and lying is learned early on, and then it is brought into the relationship. And so many times, the wife can rightly say, I've never given you a reason not to trust me. And that can be absolutely true, because it's not about trusting the wife. It's more about the fact that I can't trust my truth, so I hide it, and then I bring that into the relationship.
Mm-hmm. We talk about, just briefly here, I would mention that one of the things we study is the developmental cycles of an individual. And Eric Erickson did, you know, some wonderful work on that. And I think one of the very early stages for a child is to decide whether they can trust or they're mistrusting those around them in their environment. And like you say, our early life experiences add so much to what our beliefs are about that. And I think, like in our case, Mark's early life experience was that he was hurt by people very early on and abused. And my early life experience was that I wasn't. So I did have very different beliefs about truth-telling and needing to lie. You know, it never really occurred to me too much, except for those sneaker things. And there were probably some others like that too. But all that to say, I think we came into our marriage with some very different belief systems about truth-telling and just patterns we had gotten used to. So it is hard to convince wives sometimes that the lying is not because they're trying to deceive you necessarily. It is a pattern that comes in, and the fear might be more about losing you than trying to deceive you.
Right. Well, ironically, one of the things that we talk about to the men, the people that we lie to the most are many times the people that we love the most. Mm-hmm. It's the people that we're most afraid of losing. And it is, we will own, it is distorted thinking. It is not right thinking. But it does make sense. You know, you kind of alluded to this. So some people grow up in environments where people are not perfect, but they're safe. They are available. They are kind. They are caring. So if I grew up in that environment, I'm going to grow up believing that people are trustworthy. If I grow up in an environment where it's not always safe, where people don't follow through, where people aren't available, where people maybe invade in very harmful ways, then I'm growing up with a sense that people aren't trustworthy and I'm going to be suspicious. Well, if I enter into relations with a certain level of suspicion, then it's going to be cautious. I'm going to wait and see. I'm going to hold things back. And it may not be obvious. It may not be evident. And yet it is going to influence the way that we relate to someone else. So if I start with the belief you are trustworthy and I'm going to trust you, that leads one direction. But if it's I am suspicious and I'm not sure I can trust you, that's going to lead to another direction.
Well, I think we want to make our audience clear about our beliefs that lying, hiding, covering up, deceiving, whatever we want to call it, is incredibly hurtful in trying to develop an intimate relationship, emotionally, spiritually intimate relationship. So we hope that you don't take on the belief that just because we're talking about various ways and we all do some of these things, that one is necessarily equal to the way another lies, because some of them are very egregious, for sure. But we're just trying to also point out that it's such a more complicated topic than just deciding that someone is a liar, is gaslighting, or whatever it is. I think we all can fall into ways of that, and maybe we can become more partners in understanding some of why we do what we do, when we can take a look at how we also, you know, stray from the truth at times in terms of our own life.
Yeah. Well, and we often talk about this idea that understanding does not in any way minimize the significance of the consequences of it. And a lot of times, views around here, we certainly don't want to minimize it. And at the other end of the pendulum, we don't want to catastrophize it. You know, minimizing it means I'm not going to take it seriously and recognize the pain and the chaos I've created for someone else. Catastrophizing it, though, is over-focusing on it in such a way that it leaves us feeling hopeless. Mm-hmm. What we're desiring is to right-size it, and at the heart of right-sizing it is the truth. You know, whatever is true is true. And so if I'm able to live in that truth, even if it's a painful, chaotic truth with consequences, that truth is still going to set me free.
That's the right size of time for this. Oh, we're going to have Deb come back for another podcast with us where we can continue this conversation and some other areas that we can explore about being a truth teller. We'd like to thank you for joining us today on the Faithful and True podcast. We hope that the show has been beneficial to you. We hope that you've also had the opportunity to visit the Faithful and True YouTube channel, where we're pleased to see that we are growing in our subscriptions. Like other podcasts that are out there in the real world, we are dependent on you to give us your support, to view our podcast, and to click that like button and that subscribe button. We appreciate it greatly. So until we join you again, we hope that this coming week for you is going to be a week that's filled with many blessings and great visions.